Welcome to the Shame Free Zone with Veronica Monet, your friendly former sex worker and certified sexologist. The Shame Free Zone is a safe place for your questions and your secrets about all things sexual.
Thanks for joining me tonight. My guest is Dr. Charles Reynolds, and he has graced us with a phone call today from Orlando, Florida. He's been out there spending a wonderful time at Disney World, is that right?
That's right, down here with my three sons.
Wonderful, wonderful. It's vacation time for everybody, I think. I just got back from a vacation myself. Actually, took two, one up to Oregon and went to the Grand Canyon for the first time. So.
Why not? Two or three, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, it's a good thing. So I've been looking at your website, and I am quite fascinated. First of all, you don't really look like your typical doctor. What's up with that?
Well, you know, I used to look exactly like your typical doctor as an ER physician when I had to earn people's trust quickly because they didn't know me. You walk in, I'm a stranger, your child is sick.
Right.
And so I dressed the part, I kept my hair short, and I actually wore a tie round the clock because I found it would earn people's trust quickly. But now that I'm in private practice, I dress the way that I feel most comfortable, and the people who love me come, and the ones who don't go somewhere else.
Well, you know, it's an interesting thing. Most of the medical doctors that I have been a patient, you know, with or met, actually are usually kind of exuding ill health. they don't look that good, you know what I mean? And you look like an athlete.
Unfortunately, I think healthcare and medicine in America has turned into not healthcare. It's disease care. And there is this little slice of the population that is not real sick, but they're not very well. And that's the area that I've chosen to really focus on. I think they get dropped by the wayside. We're not really trained well as physicians to take care of them. But if you come to me from another part of the country to take care of you and I'm not very well, you'll get back on the plane and go home. So I think it's part of my business to practice what I preach, or else I might as well hang up the phone.
I know. I can't tell you how many, you know, I'm a person who believes in preventive medicine, so I've gone in to see healthcare professionals complaining about this thing or that thing and realize that I'm talking to somebody who doesn't even enjoy as good a health as I do.
No,
and they're looking at me like, get out of my office, you crazy woman, you're fine.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh, okay, that's right. I mean, because you look like you're suffering from, you know, type 2 diabetes and food allergies, mm-hmm, and God knows what else.
Unfortunately.
So you got a BS in chemistry, and then you went to medical school. Did you kind of change your mind at some point?
It was sort of a roundabout thing. I had I studied chemistry and math and worked for 3 years as a research chemist and was studying biomedical engineering, and the laboratory was lonely. And so I wound up going to medical school. But I think it served me well to be in research like I was.
Okay.
Unfortunately, though, another sad fact is when you're in research, rewarded for new ideas, I found out very quickly when you go to medical school, you have to be careful because if you throw out too many ideas too quickly, you're a quack. So you have to be careful about being too far out of the box.
Yeah, boy, it's interesting. I saw Oprah Winfrey laying into some woman because she was taking an alternative approach to her breast cancer. And it's almost a religion for some people, you know, to pursue Western medicine without utilizing any of the other modalities that might be available.
I feel sort of like an imposter. I came up thinking in a very healthy way. I had, I think, an unusual family in that way. And I like to think of it as not really alternative medicine. I like to think of most doctors as just being narrow-viewed. And ideally, medicine should encompass everything that works. And so it's not really alternative. I don't think and I'm not correcting you, I'm just saying semantics, the way I like to think about it,
mm-hmm.
the antibiotic or the herb or the steam bath, whichever works the best for that person at that particular time, that's the right medicine. And a physician should know all of those things and should be angry enough at the disease to do what works for that person. Now, you watch the most conservative of physicians let his family get sick or let him get sick. He'll start poring over the conservative literature and the, you know, quote, alternative literature.
Right.
But ideally, it should be all one body of knowledge. Not that you can know all of it, but it should be all one body of knowledge. What's happened is that anything that you can't buy at the local corner drugstore has become labeled alternative by doctors who are trained just to hand out drugs.
Well, as my listeners know, my show always has something to do with sex, and I'm going to pull out one of my doctor anecdotes that is sexual in nature. I went to a Western doctor with a bladder infection, and he was telling him that I was pretty sure that I'd gotten this infection because I hadn't female ejaculated after sex. And he was like, female ejaculation, what's that? And I said, well, that's when the woman has an orgasm and, you know, fluid comes out.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, oh, I never studied it in med school, so it doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm. Not surprised at all.
That's exactly that's a quote. That's what got me. I'm like, okay, maybe you never experienced it, you never read about it, you never heard about it, but couldn't you at least have an open mind? But to actually have the nerve to say, I did not read about it in med school, so it doesn't exist.
It's really frightening, isn't it?
Yeah,
I read somewhere
shocking.
That a new idea to the brain is like a foreign protein to the body. It's like people want to reject,
oh, wow.
Reject it immediately.
It's like an allergen, huh? I never thought of it that way.
For most docs, it is. Unfortunately, it is.
Well, you know, boy, I want to get sidetracked with all kinds of stuff here. I see that you have treated scuba diving injuries, and I've got just shy of 100 dives. So
wonderful.
Very interested in that, but probably should ask you about sexual transmutation. Is that what you call it?
Yes.
Because I saw that on your website, and that's the reason I called you for an interview. I've never heard of such a thing, and I want to know what is it, and is this something you invented, or is this something you studied about somewhere else? Or
this is part, I'll tell you a story, if that's okay, that explains what sexual transmutation is.
Okay.
But before I tell the story, William Osler, who started internal medicine at Johns Hopkins, you know, years ago, he was the man. He was like the doctor of doctors in the United States. He said there's three kinds of medical students. He's lecturing to his students. If I ask you guys how long it takes for a fingernail to grow from the cuticle out, some of you guys won't care, type one. Type two, some of you will go read about it in the book. Type three, some of you will get some silver nitrate and make a mark on your fingernail and see how long it takes it to grow out.
Oh.
And I'm sort of at type three, and I've done some weird sort of experiments on my own self. I mean, nothing crazy, but I did, actually some people would think it's sort of crazy. And I did this little weird experiment on myself my second year of college. And I'll tell you about it, and I think it gives a good example of what sex transmutation is. But before I tell you that story, let me tell you, I did not invent it. Later, after I did this experiment, I found those exact words in Henry David Thoreau's book, Walden. In his chapter called Higher Laws, you will find sex transmutation. You'll find it in Sigmund Freud's analysis of how Leonardo da Vinci found his genius. And if you know how to look, you'll see it between the lines in Benjamin Franklin's autobiography. So
are you saying that Henry David Thoreau actually used the word sexual transmutation?
Yes, absolutely. And talks about continence and incontinence being his old-fashioned way of saying ejaculation and non-ejaculation, of course.
Wow.
And it just jumps off the page at you after you hear it and after you've lived it, but I never saw it until I did this experiment. And I was the nerd in high school, people, my nickname was actually Professor. So I was not very sexually experienced when I finished high school, but let me tell you this story, and I think you'll get an idea about what sex transmutation is. First year of college, I did very well. At 6'2", now I'm a distance runner, so I'm kind of lean anyway, but at 6'2", I finished my first year of college at 135 pounds. I mean, I was a bone. And I had mononucleosis, and basically I was just a sickly sort of guy at the end of my first year of college. Now, I read nothing about sex transmutation, but I had this little experiment I decided to do my second year of college that turns out was very similar to what I think Henry David Thoreau did. All right, this is what I did. I had read in a biology book. Am I boring you? Do I need to hang with this?
No.
Okay.
You're definitely not boring me, and I'm trusting that the listeners...
I don't want to ramble too much,
no,
but this
no,
is pretty powerful stuff. I mean, it's powerful.
Henry David Thoreau and you are both doing something called sexual transmutation. I'm sure we're all quite intrigued.
All right, let me tell you what he actually said about it. Using those words, he actually said, it is the beginning of genius and heroism and holiness. It's like... And we're not all trying to get all those three things, but...
So basically, courage, creativity, and spirituality.
Yes, from sex transmutation. He thought it was the key. Now, you know where else you'll find it? And I'll finish my story in a minute. There's an old-fashioned book. It's been around forever, sold a gazillion copies. But they leave a chapter out of it, and there's all these different versions of it. Audio version that's been revised 2 or 3 times. But if you listen to the Nightingale Conant audio version, they leave this chapter out. It's Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill. It's been around.
Oh, really?
Yes. There is a chapter in his book called Sex Transmutations, Chapter 10.
So we've got courage, we've got spirituality, we've got creativity, and now we've got prosperity.
He actually said it was the number one most important, powerful way to motivate you to be rich.
Wow.
In his book.
And they took it out of the book?
Well, it's watered down in the revised versions, and it's left out of the audio versions. But he talks about how many wealthy people have high libido and how they use sex transmutation to take that libido and make money.
All right. Well, you've definitely got to tell us what this is. So finish your story about your... You're a
bone-thin
little nerd.
Okay, I'm a bone-thin little nerd that just finished his first year of pre-med with chemistry and math and made a bunch of good grades, but now I have mononucleosis and pharyngitis, and I get a tonsillectomy, and I'm literally almost bedridden for the summer.
My God, you're
okay.
Like Woody Allen.
Yes, that, I mean, if you had looked at me back then, picture Napoleon Dynamite about 20 pounds lighter.
Oh,
and that's
my God.
I would have looked,
okay.
All right, now, in one of my biology books, I read that the average sperm lives about 90 days.
3 months.
Yes.
And that's inside the body, not outside, right?
Yes, so without ejaculation, you make a certain number of sperm, you know, a gazillion a day, and then, but whatever sperm you make today, it will be stored, but that sperm will die off in about 3 months.
Wow.
Okay.
And women's eggs are alive before they're born.
Yes, you may have all the eggs you're ever going to make when you're a child.
Yes, exactly.
But we're making millions, and they die off, and we make millions more. They're always fresh, which is why there's less risk of disease usually with a 70-year-old man.
Oh, because the sperms are fresh.
Yes, absolutely.
Oh.
Okay, so here I am. And I have this. Now, I had this idea.
Wait. Let's back up for just a minute. There is not less risk of STDs when you said disease. What you meant was genetic mutations when you're procreating.
Yes, I should have been more specific.
Oh, that's I just wanted to make sure the listeners didn't get
yes.
confused there and think that because you're 70, you can't get AIDS or
yeah.
something.
Thank you for clarifying that.
No,
and
it
actually,
means that if you're a 70-year-old man, your baby is less likely to have genetic mutations than if you're a 70-year-old woman, which, of course, anyway, we can't do that. So
yes.
Please continue.
Okay. Thank you for clarifying that. All right, so here I am. I'm 17 years old. This is 20. I'm 48 now, so this is,
Oh, we're exactly the same age.
Yeah, so here we are about 31 years ago.
Yeah.
All right, now, I read this fun fact, and I think, well, what if the great designer decided to make this deal where, okay, I'm the average teenage kid who's, you know, masturbating several times a day. All right? And
average teenage boy.
Yes, average teenage boy who's masturbating several, this is just what we do. And we either masturbate or we lie about it. That's the only two kinds of teenage
boys. Masturbate and what?
The only two types of teenage boys. You either masturbate or you lie about it.
Or you lie about it, yeah. Gotcha.
Okay, so I'm masturbating several times a day like every other teenage boy. And I read this fact, and I'm in the practically bedridden. I really was ordered to bed for a lot of the summer by this doctor.
Uh-huh.
And I think, what if the body was designed, if we were designed to propagate, to have babies? And what if the body was designed so that if I'm not manufacturing babies, somehow that the body keeps becoming stronger and more attractive to the opposite sex until you do, sort of like the insects, or, you know, you read about different types of insects that they mate and then they die.
Okay.
So maybe there's something like that. I'm just postulating, you know, I'm a teenage kid.
You're thinking to yourself, if you don't have sex, that you may become more and more attractive?
Yes, that was my theory. I'm laying in, you know, what do you have to, you're a kid and you're laying in bed. And
you are one weird kid, I gotta say.
I am, and I was one weird guy, but it works out. I think Thoreau was weird, too. All right, so here I am. I'm thinking this, and I decide, well, let's experiment. Let's see what happens if I go 91 days without ejaculating. Because
wow.
That would be basically a full load. You see what I'm saying? Because
yeah.
At the end of that, on the 95th day, everything I made on day 90 is gone, and I'm just kind of rebuilding that same level of potential to make a baby.
Okay.
So my full potential to make a child would be...
This is very tantric, isn't it?
What's that?
This is very tantric.
Yeah, really, and this is sort of crazy. So this is what I decided to do. All right, so I start this process about the time I start my second year of college. And I'm weighing 135. By about the... And it was hard to pull off, but I actually pulled it off. First, I had wet dreams. I had to found that I had to figure out a way to get my mind on something else as I was falling asleep, as a way to avoid the wet dreams.
You were actually able to do that?
Yes. And what I found I had to do was I had to get, it was cassette tapes back then. I would listen to cassette tapes that had spiritual type messages on them. And what I was doing was I was making my mind rechannel to something else. I was transmuting that energy to different place.
Oh.
It wasn't going away. It was being taken to a different place.
Okay.
All right. By the end of my second year of college, with no drugs, just exercise, good diet, I weighed 195 pounds and still had a 29-inch waist. It was so absolutely freaky when I showed up after school the second year and saw people that, you know, I didn't see because I was off at school. They didn't recognize me.
Wow.
It was so freaky, and I was taking calculus and physical chemistry, and I found that my mind, I wound up going the whole year, because by the end of the
third... You went an entire year without ejaculating?
By the end of the third month, my mind was so out there, I was literally reading my physical chemistry book. I mean, it's like I'd get up and read it almost like the newspaper before class. Now, I'm not stupid, and math comes fairly... In math, I'm stupid in some areas, but I'm pretty bright when it comes to math. But I was a lot brighter after doing that, and my energy came up, and my libido was out the roof, but I was rechanneling it, and I was exercising like a fiend. And my personality changed, my voice dropped about 3 octaves, and women started, giving me stuff in their numbers in my pockets. But I actually went the whole school year without, this is like some crazy experiment, I know. But by the end of the school year, I weighed 195 pounds. I gained 60 pounds and kept a 29-inch waist.
Okay, so let me play opposing, I was going to say devil's advocate, but just turn into... What happened once you start? You did start having sex at some point, didn't you?
Yes. I mean, that summer was crazy.
Okay. Well, when you started having sex, did you lose weight or your health go down, or did you become stupider and weren't able to comprehend your homework, or what?
Okay, so this is... No. This is what I did. Well, yes and no. Down a notch, but not back to where I was, and not back to where I was by a long shot. Even now at 48, not back to where I was when I was in my first year of college, because I learned something, and I started reading, I started poring and looking, and I started finding that thing popping up, that phrase, sex transmutation, and I had experienced what it was like to control that energy. And it's sort of a, once you get it, the concept is kind of, it becomes very plain, and I'll give you some concrete ways to think about it in a minute,
mm-hmm.
but let me give you, sometimes it's good to understand something by thinking of the opposite. Imagine how it was my first year of college. I had this urge to procreate, to create. And, you know, sex to me is not, a woman with her legs spread and a man lying between her. That's about, it can be as mechanical as walking across the road.
Mm-hmm.
Sex is this creative energy. You know, God is love and sex is part of that creativity that's in everything. And when you understand that part of it, and you realize the opposite, what I was doing my first year of college, I have this urge, I have this energy in me, and I'll masturbate in 5 minutes and it's gone. Now what good did that do me? Alright? I didn't use it as a way to encourage me to develop a relationship. I didn't use it for energy to go to lift my mind. All I did, I got a few minutes of pleasure and blam, it's gone. And at that point, it was just a nuisance to me. I didn't know what to do with it.
Okay.
It was just a nuisance. I got an erection. I got to study for a chemistry test tomorrow. This is, is in my way.
God!
You know what I mean?
It's a little different for men than it is for women, I have to say.
Well, actually, there's a way to apply it to women as well. But it's mostly been written about with men, and I'm doing another book about how it's different with women now. And I needed a co-author for this because I'm not a woman, and I'll get to that because she's an amazing woman that's been writing and lecturing about sex for since the 60s.
What was the name of your first book?
The name of my first book is Anytime for As Long As You Want.
Anytime for As Long As You Want.
Uh-huh. Strength, Genius, Libido, and it's a 15-day course for men, okay?
Okay, so now how is your message and whatever you have in that book
mm-hmm.
different than, I'm trying to distinguish this from, say, Western religion, which likes to preach celibacy.
Okay, I'm glad you brought that up because that's something that scares people. Okay, you're trying to control this energy. Does that mean I can't have sex? I actually, believe it or not, went that whole second year of college without sex. Now, but if you do this right, if you want to have sex, and now I do, and I did then after my second year of college.
Okay.
But you will actually, as a male, you will have more sex. So what you do, all right, let me get down to the practicality of this. Let's say that, let me back up one more time, and then I'll answer the question. The simple way to define sex transmutation is this. You're taking the energy that makes you want to procreate and have sex, and you're channeling it into something else. And for a male, that's just the urge to deposit your sperm in a beautiful female. You're taking that urge, and you're doing something else with it. Now, that may be to have sex. But if you just want to get rid of that urge, you can ejaculate, you can masturbate and be done in a minute and go on about your life. But if you take that urge and you speak to a woman that inspires you and makes you feel happy or good or whatever it is you're looking for in a relationship or in just the pleasure of that day, if you take that urge and you interact with this woman or male, if you're homosexual, if you're interacting with someone, And you're using that energy to motivate you. You're taking that energy, and it's motivating you to interact. That's sex transmutation. And then if you have sex with this person, but you don't ejaculate fully, and by keeping that energy with you without ejaculating, it allows you to be more romantic or more whatever it is that you want in the bedroom.
Now, this is actually where the tantric aspects of what you're talking about come in. Are you familiar with tantra?
Yes, yes. That's where, you're exactly right. That's where you take that energy and it allows this prolonged sexual interaction that can be either used to develop this deep relationship or elevate the two of you to this place where you're in spiritual bliss, whatever it is you're looking for.
And see, I've actually done, you know, I don't know if I've never called it sexual transmutation, but I did some things like that this last year.
Wonderful.
Where I was, I abstained from all sex for about 9 months.
Mm-hmm.
Then I had a peak sexual encounter with a partner.
Mm-hmm.
And it led to these spontaneous muscular contractions they call kriyas, which
mm-hmm.
is out of a meditation practice.
Mm-hmm.
So my meditation and my sexuality kind of started getting conflated with each other.
Yes, absolutely.
And then I took a couple lovers who were accomplished with tantra. They were people who had studied spirituality and meditation for a long, long time.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really just being with people who have more practice in that area can kind of put you over the edge and help you start focusing more on where you want to go. But, like, no intercourse, no genital contact for that matter, and yet it was really, really some amazing peak sexual experiences.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. There, part of my journey, this journey started of finding what all can be done with this and what have people done with this energy other than just deposit sperm as quickly as possible. What have people done with it? As part of that journey, I studied meditation at CSA. There's a fellow who's a direct disciple of Paramahansa Yogananda who lives near me in the Georgia Mountains. And started that process again about 30 years ago while I was still in college and studied Kriya Yoga. And that
Kriya, that was okay. Tell me a little bit about that, because that was what I had, these spontaneous muscular contractions.
Mm-hmm. Kriya involves, and to really know the, you know, Paramahansa Yogananda, who wrote Autobiography of the Yogi, came here back in the 20s and taught America Kriya Yoga, and he gave it out freely. But now he has his church, a Self-Realization Fellowship Church out there in California, And you have to reach a certain point before you're initiated, and I don't feel qualified to tell people the details, but basically what it amounts to is focusing the mind towards the Creator and using breathing techniques and possibly Hatha Yoga in combination with breathing techniques to bring the energy up the spine into a higher level, and using that reach a place to where you're close to God.
It was so much of this. We were actually circulating our breath, so he would breathe out and I would breathe in, and then
mm-hmm.
I would breathe out and he would breathe in.
Yes.
So we were eye gazing, we were circulating our breath,
mm-hmm.
and it was amazing. I did not have an orgasm, but the spiritual sexual experience that I had
mm-hmm.
lasted for an entire month.
Yes.
And it was so profound that I did not want to ruin it with an orgasm.
Yes.
And that was, you know, I've never even heard myself say that. I thought orgasms were the peak experiences until this happened to me.
Ode to a Grecian Urn, you know, the old poem that we all had to learn in college, where the guy's just about to catch the lover, but they're caught in the act on this Grecian urn that's thousands of years old, and he never does catch her because they're stuck in this position. You know, it's always best right before you get it. And there's this blissful state that is right on the edge of satisfaction.
Yeah.
And you can get there, and that is sex transmutation. And now, and it goes
okay.
by different names, but that's part of it, at least if it's directed in a sexual manner. It's also sexual transmutation when you're a second-year college student and you don't have a girlfriend and you've gotten to, you want to do good on a physical chemistry test and a calculus test, and so you've taken your sexual energy and you've refocused it, your erection goes away, and you're just really pouring all of your energy into a math book. That's sex transmutation.
I really believe that anything that we enjoy, you know, buildings, paintings, books, that it's all springing from that kundalini energy, that sexual energy.
Yes, you take an artist and castrate him or her, and their art becomes neutered as well.
Oh my God, that's horrible.
I mean,
have they actually done this?
I don't know anybody's ever done it, but I think that's what would happen.
I want to ask you some things about Thoreau again, but I got to check in with our listeners here. Just remind everybody out there, this is a live call-in program, and you're more than welcome to call in if you've got any questions for Dr. Charles Runnels. I'm sure he'd be more than happy to enlighten you. Our number toll-free in the U.S. is 877-876-5227. That number again is 877-876-5227. In U.S. and Canada, you can call toll-free at 888-815-9756. Once again, toll-free in Canada is 888-815-9756. And the direct line here locally is 530-876-3222. Once again, that's 530-876-3222. Okay, now I wanted to ask you, Dr. Charles, about Henry David Thoreau. You've got a quote here on your website: every man, woman is a builder of a temple called his body to the god he worships. We are all sculptors and painters, and our material is our own flesh and blood and bones.
Yes, that's Thoreau.
And you say that he specifically talks about sexual transmutation. Can you tell us, the listeners, a little bit more about what exactly does he say about it?
Absolutely. Now, let's get the picture here first before I give you this. Okay, Thoreau was basically, he was squatting pretty much. He goes out into the forest and builds a cabin in the woods. It's not even his land. But in this, let me read you this quote. And while he's here, out in the forest, he's taking notes. And these notes later become Walden, which inspired Gandhi. It inspired, you know, in his, what do you call his passive, he goes off to jail. Well, Thoreau went off to jail over a poll tax or something. And Thoreau, so of course, I don't need to defend Thoreau. You know, he has inspired a lot of people with these notes that he made while in the forest. Now listen to what he said. Here's a quote from Thoreau. These are two paragraphs, so it'll take me about a minute to read this. This is Thoreau, quote, "We are conscious of an animal in us." This is straight from Walden. "We are conscious of an animal in us which awakens in proportion as our higher nature slumbers. It is reptile and sensual, and perhaps cannot be wholly expelled. Yet the spirit can for the time pervade and control every member and function of the body and transmute what in form is the grossest sensuality into purity and devotion. The generative energy," and this is me talking, I mean, that's libido, right? That's the urge to have sex.
Right.
"The generative energy, which when we are loose, dissipates and makes us unclean," dissipates, okay? It's going to make us weak. When we are loose, it dissipates and makes us unclean. When we are continent, invigorates and inspires us.
Oh, so this is what you're talking about, and you're saying that this is his way of being a proponent of withholding the ejaculation.
Yes, that's the old-fashioned way of saying it. But what else could he mean by continent?
Yeah.
When we are continent, invigorates and inspires us. How else can a man be continent?
Well, this is the same thing that they talk about in Tantra, where they really advise men to withhold their ejaculation. But for how long? I mean, for a man out there who wanted to use his sexuality to to invigorate his relationship and his work and his creativity and his spirituality.
Mm-hmm.
What would you recommend?
That, well, not just me. I have a recommendation, but I actually pulled that from the Chinese Tao. And the Chinese Tao, and I can't read Chinese, so I'm reading a translation of it that I picked up years ago in my quest to figure out how do you do this. And if you don't mind, I'd like to leave that sort of for them to find out if they buy my book.
You'd like to what?
I'd like for them to find out the details of that for my book.
Oh, well, of course.
Yeah.
I don't expect you to give them away everything
that
for free.
That is there in the book.
What's the name of the book again?
Anytime for as long as you want. You can find it on Amazon, and you can download it if you're in another country or don't want to wait for the mail. You can download it from my website, which is Temple Repair, is your body being a temple. All in word, templerepair.com.
Templerepair.com.
Yes.
And they can order the book from you there.
Yes.
Or they can go to Amazon, and your last name is spelled R-U-N-E-L-S.
Yes.
Reynolds.
Yes.
It's Charles Reynolds.
As long as you want. And that tells the details of how long, in my book it tells the details of how long, but that number varies with age, and there's a way to calculate it, and there's a way to estimate it without calculating it. But the calculation came from the Chinese Tao. The Chinese were into this way before Thoreau thought of it.
Right.
But I don't want to scare people off because, you know, Thoreau goes on, if you read the rest of it, he says, and this is where I don't want to scare people, but he says, chastity is the flowering of a man, and what are called genius, heroism, holiness, and the like, but various fruits which succeed it. But then later he says, what is chastity? How do you know if you're chaste? And I think that chastity has more, I mean, you can say chaste as in you don't have sex with a female or with anybody ever,
mm-hmm.
and never ejaculate. And I think in theory that's what should be behind the idea of the priesthood. You're not being a priest so you can masturbate. You're being a priest so you take that sexual energy and you use it to lift yourself towards God. That's what I think was probably meant when they came up with this idea of people being separated and married to the church.
Haven't you experienced using your sexuality to actually move you closer to God?
Yes, and that's what I teach in the book, and I'll tell you more about that right now. I won't make you buy the book for that because you've asked me that question. I think it's key for people to know you can use sex transmutation to have better sex. Because when you withhold the complete release of that energy, then it becomes this generator within you that makes you want to connect more, and it lifts your spirituality, and it lifts your relationship, and it lifts the whole temperature of the room up, because this urge to procreate is not satisfied by ejaculation. It actually comes back in on itself, and because it's a positive feedback loop, so that tomorrow it's even greater. Or you have sex with your lover this morning, and then you go make money at your business, or you go exercise, or you go write a book, and then you come back and you have sex with her again in the afternoon, or you go pray, or whatever it is you're going to do.
Hmm.
But not
ejaculate.
Without ejaculating.
That's because a lot of guys out there who would probably feel like that wasn't sex.
That's true. And there are some guys, this is not for them. Now, it's not like you never ejaculate. But you can say, well, what's the point of having sex if you're not going to ejaculate? Well, like I said, the other extreme is, if your point is just to ejaculate, you know, buy yourself some Jergens lotion and you don't even need the girlfriend, you know?
That's what I always said about escorting. I said if men were there to get off, they could have stayed home and saved their money.
Exactly. And, you know, the other thing is, like you said about this breath control, without sharing breath, without a kiss and breath sharing, sex is almost like masturbating, even if you are with another person.
Yeah.
But there's this whole universe. I think it should be taught when people reach puberty. I wasn't taught what sex meant. And I had to go find it. And it would amaze you the number of emails I get from college men telling me, wow, this has really changed my life.
Really?
And they've not quit having sex, but it changes their life. Because now, instead of, if they do want to have a girlfriend, if they're approaching this girl after masturbating 5 times yesterday, there's not, the energy isn't there. But if they're saving that energy, they become a lion when they're with men. You know, back in the 50s, the philosophy was, and now people take steroids if they're athletes, but back in the 50s, when people weren't taking steroids, the way you got ready for a boxing match is you, one of the things you did is you didn't get around your girlfriend.
And the reason behind that was because having an ejaculation would make you less of a ferocious fighter?
Yes, absolutely. All right, think about this. What do most males want to do after they ejaculate?
Sleep. Yes.
And you know why? There's a huge release of prolactin. What does a female want to do when she nurse feeds? She wants to sleep because prolactin is released like crazy. Now, there's 280-something hormones made by the pituitary gland, and I don't think anybody can explain everything that happens with ejaculation, but we know prolactin is released by the buckets.
And prolactin, isn't that the breastfeeding?
Yes, but in males, there's a prolactin level, too, and an abnormal level of prolactin can be a cause of impotence and loss of libido, and I find it occasionally in men who come to me. You know, they read my book, and they come see me, and part of what I do, another way to visualize sex transmutation is think of a dam across a stream. All right? The more the water upstream from the dam, the more power you can generate. A castrated priest is not a powerful, he's not as powerful as far as transmuting sexual energy, even though he's not having sex.
Oh.
Because there's no water to back up behind the dam.
Well, wouldn't it be better for a priest to be masturbating without ejaculating?
Possibly, depending on how he did that. What is he doing while he's masturbating? Where's his mind flowing? Possibly.
Well, I'm just thinking. You know, I've met people who have abstained from sex for years and actually had some serious complications with their physiology. Have you ever heard about that?
Well, that's a whole different, you know, we can get into that. There are people who wonder about, you know, what happens when you have, if you don't have sex, what happens to the prostate gland?
Mm-hmm.
And that sort of thing. And that's, I would like to get to that, but I don't feel like I think there's nagging things still that maybe I haven't explained yet.
Okay.
About why.
Well, we've got about another 10 minutes.
Okay.
So I
want to make sure that it's plain exactly that if you practice this, you don't have to give up sex. You will have better sex. But, you know, I can't deal with if your ideas of sex is, you know, you want to just ejaculate every time as soon as you can, and that's your idea, then it's not going to work for you. But if your idea is that you want to be able to have sex for as long as you want or your lover wants. And part of doing this is learning how to control your ejaculation.
Right.
Or else you can't do this. And that's part of what I teach in the book. But if your idea of sex is to bring your relationship deeper and possibly even explore the idea of bringing your mental thoughts and even your spiritual thoughts and even your physical body to a different level by how you use sexual energy, then it will work. I mean, this is a philosophy you should explore. So, you know, and not everybody wants to do that.
Right.
Sigmund Freud wrote a little book about Leonardo da Vinci and his ideas, Sigmund Freud's ideas about how Leonardo developed by reading some of his notebooks. And his idea that part of the reason that Leonardo was such a genius was that he transmuted his sexual energy into his art. Now, and I said, you know, I don't know of an artist that was castrated and you looked at their art before and after. But as an artist myself, in talking to artists that have bought my book around the country,
uh-huh.
in in a way, if you overindulge and ejaculate more than what's recommended by the Chinese Tao or by the way I teach you to calculate this,
yeah,
you are castrating yourself at least for a short time until you rebuild that energy.
Oh, wow.
And you will see your art change.
Huh.
Do you want me to address that idea about the prostate, or should, or
well,
you know?
Yeah,
okay,
if you don't mind,
prostate.
I do have concerns about that, because I have heard that withholding ejaculation can actually have an adverse effect on a male's genital health.
Okay, two things here. First of all, you hear this idea that you should ejaculate as much as you can to prevent prostate cancer.
Right.
That's a common question I get.
Well, they just had research come out this month.
Okay, this is what I think that's true, but it depends on something. I think just like chronic inflammation of anything causes cancer. You smoke and drink, it chronically irritates the throat, you're more likely to get throat cancer.
Okay.
You have a chronic cervicitis and you're more likely to get cervical cancer. I mean, it's been demonstrated in lots of different ways. You keep snuff in your cheek all the time, it stays irritated, you get cancer. You have a chronic prostatitis, and it's been shown people have more prostatitis are more likely to get prostate cancer. People who eat more meat are more likely to get prostate cancer.
Okay.
And what I think is happening is that if you have a prostate fluid that is not healthy, yeah, you're going to be better off if you keep your prostate empty. But what I think is, but you're also going to have less sexual energy. You're going to have a higher prolactin level. You're going to be more fatigued, and I think your immune system is going to suffer. I know you're not going to feel as happy. Prolactin is also a depressant. But I think a better alternative is to have a healthy prostate fluid rather than keep an unhealthy fluid empty. I mean, unhealthy prostate empty. And there are ways to do that. You can do things like you take zinc, you make sure that if you have an infection, it's treated. You can have prostate massage as part of what you do when you have sex or when you're not having sex. There are things that you can do nutritionally, selenium, vitamin E, that have actually been proven to help prevent prostate cancer. You can keep your hormone levels down. Older men, their estrogen levels go up. You should bring it down and keep it to what's normal for a male. Testosterone actually has never been associated with prostate cancer, and drops in testosterone actually are. So you keep your testosterone levels up. And there's all this physiology that's in the literature about how to keep a healthy prostate fluid, but rather we're just taught to keep the prostate empty, and I don't think it's the answer.
Hmm.
And that's Charles talking there. You know, I don't have any long-term studies where I've somehow analyzed prostate fluid and then followed people for 50 years to see whether the healthy fluid got sick and the unhealthy didn't. But
right.
I do have research showing that if you've had more prostate infections, and there are certain things about your diet that if you're practicing or you're not practicing are associated with prostate cancer or not. And so I think that abstaining with a healthy body increases energy. I think if you don't have a healthy prostate, then you need to get it healthy rather than just keep it empty the rest of your life.
Okay. All right. Well, we have a few more minutes, and I just one of the things I thought would be nice to address is just what are the aside from, you know, increased creativity or prosperity, what about the actual sensations? Because I know when I have not pursued orgasm and I pursued some of these more tantric forms of sexual interaction, that there has been like a different type of a static state. And are you familiar with that? Could you speak to that a little bit about what it's like? You know, it's like the other pleasures that aren't about orgasm.
Yes, and I think that's it's the part that's hidden from the person who doesn't want to pursue this because their greatest pleasure is the orgasm.
Right.
And they've skipped over the in-between. They learned to skip over it when they were masturbating in the middle of the night when they were teenagers and didn't want to get caught. And they kept the practice up and never figured out there's a very long in-between that can extend and become an amazing source of pleasure and even inspiration. And that's where you, I think, people will find also other depths when they're with their lover as far as the interaction. I think you can have things happen when you have an orgasm with another person. But I think when you explore what happens on the edge of orgasm with another person for an extended period of time is where you find this blending where you're not sure where one flesh stops and the other starts.
That's exactly what that peak experience for me was about.
It feels like you become one being, and that one being becomes joined with the one being.
Yes.
And it is amazing. I experienced the same thing. You know, I lived down here near Biloxi, and I went over to the Hard Rock Hotel in the spa there with a friend of mine a few weeks ago, a very close friend, because I wouldn't do this with someone who is not a very close friend, a woman that I've been considering a serious long-term relationship with. And we did a similar breathing technique, and she was blown away.
Wow.
And we were dressed. Now, it was quiet. It was in the co-ed part of the spa, but it was not a place where it was considered appropriate to be even nude. And using those breathing techniques, being next to each other,
It really is.
Two became one with everything.
Yes. Yes. That's really what I'm trying to encourage people to do in the workshops that I teach, is to bring their spirituality and their sexuality together so that one complements the other.
Yes. And not only that, using this idea that you're talking about here, using bringing your sexuality not just together with your spirituality, with everything, with the energy that motivates you to get up in the middle of the night to take care of your child. With the, you know, as an ER doctor, I have worked, the longest I ever went was 5 days and nights without going to bed, with no coffee, nothing, except I had been for a long time without sex.
Wow.
And it made me a better doctor. Now, if I knew I had several days where I may not sleep, well, I know you have not much time, but the idea is, yes, sex can energize your whole life and your creativity when you learn how to tap into that energy. Let me read one little short thing that, you know, we talked about that bestseller that's been around forever.
Mm-hmm.
Listen to what, this is Napoleon Hill talking, okay?
Okay,
this is from his book,
we'll close
Village.
With that.
Okay. The mere, he's talking about sex transmutation and sexual energy. Okay, this is Napoleon Hill. The mere possession of this energy is not sufficient to produce a genius. The energy must be transmuted from desire for physical contact into some other form of desire and action before it will lift one to the status of a genius. Far from becoming geniuses because of great sex desires, the majority of men lower themselves through misunderstanding and misuse of this great force to the status of the lower animals. The majority of men never learn that the urge of sex has other possibilities which far transcend in importance that of mere physical expression. The majority of those who make this discovery do so after having wasted many years at a period when the sex energy is at its height.
Mm.
That's straight from Think and Grow Rich, but you won't hear that on the modern day versions.
Yes. why don't you give us your website and the name of your book one more time.
Thank you so much. The website is Temple Repair, all in word, templerepair.com. I'm so grateful. I'm a big fan of yours, and I'm very grateful for the opportunity to speak with you. I know your listeners have a lot of respect for you, and the idea that you would talk with me is a big honor.
Oh, my God. I was feeling the same way about you agreeing to be my guest.
Mm, thank you.
Mutual admiration.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Reynolds. Have a wonderful vacation, whatever's left of it, with your sons.
Thank you. Good night.
Good night.
Veronica Monet, offers healing and hope in the form of private telephone sessions. Email Veronica at sexwithoutshame.com to schedule an appointment, or visit www.sexwithoutshame.com to find out what Veronica can do for you.